The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast with your host, Adam Emmert.
Not every year of my life has been a steady transition to more awesome. Maybe have some perspective, people.
And Brandon Schultz.
Now that they have Blitz for Six, there is no way the Patriots are going to win a Super Bowl. Thank you.
Go Hawks!
This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers. And joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
What is up, Brandon? You ready to talk some ball today?
I'm always ready to talk ball, Adam.
Yeah, man. It's a lot of fun being able to at least stay a little bit in touch with what's going on in the NFL throughout the offseason. You know, before doing this show, I mean, this is the time of year where I'd kind of tune out a little bit to everything that's going on. But there's some interesting stuff. So it's been kind of fun.
It is. And we're going to get to some of that. We're also going to be talking about some of the 2018 free agents on the Seahawks. Last week, we talked the 2017 free agents. And the reason why the 2018 guys are a little bit interesting is because these guys are guys that you can either look at to re-sign, because the Seahawks look at contracts, you know, that are coming up within a year at potentially re-signing these guys. You know, we saw Michael Bennett re-sign this last year. Cam Chancellor's a guy that has been talked about re-signing. Gosh, it feels like for 3 years. He's wanted to have his contract redone. So we're going to talk a little Cam Chancellor and then potentially look at some players that you would potentially cut to save money against the cap. So we're going to be doing that today. We had the news about Blair Walsh come out after we did the show last week. And we have a potential free agent visiting the Seahawks this week. So we can talk about him as well. There's news going on, Adam, even though it's February.
Yeah. And especially with the draft being moved back, you know, it seemed like this might be a time of year where you just wouldn't have much going on. But yeah, a few things to get to. I enjoy the exercise of the idea of these 2018 free agents, because this is kind of the time period where you're looking at where you say, OK, John Schneider always says, I won't redo your contract unless there's at least just 1 year left on your deal. Well, here you are with a couple of these guys, and they're names.
They are. And there are places where the team, if they wanted to really have a good chunk of money to go after offensive linemen and free agency, there are players, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that you could cut to save money to put toward that part of the team. Whether or not you want to do it, though, is a different question, but we will get into it. Starting off with the first news item that I have, Adam. This is Seahawkers podcast news. We have a new app for Windows Phone and PC users. So if you like to listen on your Surface tablet, if you'd like to listen on a Windows Phone, you can go to SeahawkersPodcast.com/Windows and you can check out our new app.
Yeah, man, we're fancy and stuff now. We got so many different apps. We got the iTunes app or the iPhone app. We got the Android app. Now there's Windows app. And I mean, yeah, we got an app for that, man. Yeah. We really do. So just make it a little easier and a little more fun for you guys to listen to. And the idea that I know what I enjoy at the app is just asking you when you hop off the pod for a while and you come back maybe a few hours later, do you want to resume from where you left off? It doesn't forget where you were. You know, just little things like that. It's pretty cool.
Yep. So SeahawkersPodcast.com/Windows. And of course, you have our other apps, too. You just add the operating system at the end. So SeahawkersPodcast.com/Android. Or /iOS or /Kindle, all the apps.
Yep.
All right. Well, first news item I wanted to talk about, Blair Walsh contract numbers came out right after the show last week, and looks like he is set to make just under $1 million and none of that guaranteed money. Does that change your opinion at all? Or does that make you feel exactly what you said last week still applies?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. We both were on kind of that same train. Yeah, no guaranteed money. Then sure. Yeah, come on in. Kick your little heart out. And if it looks like that you can actually compete with Steven Hauschka, then great. But my thought process is that he doesn't have it mentally anymore. It reminds me a lot of, remember Mike Vanderjagt?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that kicker?
Yeah.
He was awesome for like a while, right? And then all of a sudden he got the shanks and he was out of the league in like a year and a half. He was just gone.
It wasn't too long after, I think, Peyton Manning at the Pro Bowl referred to him as the idiot kicker.
Yes. Yeah, it was right in there.
Yeah.
Because he had missed a big kick. And yeah, and then it's just all downhill from there. I mean, it can go away from you forever. And it did for Vanderjagt. I think it has for Walsh. And again, a good marketing ploy, a negotiation ploy for John Schneider to help maybe bring Hausch's number down a little bit. But I'm not worried.
And if Hausch does leave, you have a backup option. You have a guy who's actually kicked for a few years, a veteran guy, and then you could potentially go for a rookie either in the draft or an undrafted guy.
Yeah, most likely an undrafted guy. You rarely draft a kicker, but
rarely, yeah, unless there's a really good kicker.
Sebastian Janikowski
sitting there. And then going in the first round like the Raiders did for him. I mean, it's kind of worked out, I guess. He's been with the team forever, but was kind of weird when it happened.
The Janikowski thing?
Yeah.
Wow, dude, that was a genius pick. Al Davis is one of the few owners that, especially, he was the owner ahead of his time with the idea that he understood the value of special teams.
Right.
And where he would spend draft capital on, you know, whether it's Shane Leckler or Ray Guy or Janikowski. And, you know, all of a sudden you have a kicker on your team for 15 years that, you know, can boom it forever. I mean, that's a great draft pick. And Janikowski's still doing it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was smart.
He maybe could have waited, is all I'm saying. But why not reach for a guy that you know?
I don't care. The whole idea of draft value, I hate that garbage, man. Do you like that player? Is he there? Do you like that player better than the other players you want to take? Then you take that player. Just take the player you like the most when you have your first shot to pick. It's not that hard. Who gives a crap what Mike Mayock says if it's a reach or whatever? Who cares?
I'm with you on that.
Okay.
But I would not draft a kicker in the top 10 and pay him, you know, like whatever a top 10 pick makes. That's a little bit. That's a reach.
Which is still nothing.
It's going to be more than a veteran kicker like Hauschka would make.
Sure, I suppose. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, with the way the salary cap's set up and everything now, or the rookie wage scale.
Right.
But
all right, other news item. Sherman Smith, the running back coach, he went on 710 ESPN this last week and talked about a few things. Main thing. That the Seahawks missed Marshawn Lynch last year. And the other thing he mentioned, that the team, it needs to regain that hunger if they're going to get back into their Super Bowl winning ways. And to me, it was kind of news that wasn't really news. So.
Good Lord. I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah. They missed Marshawn Lynch. And it stunk that Russell Wilson got his knee hurt. And they need their hunger back. And the offensive line isn't good. Like, I mean, give me another generic phrase about the team, you know? Pete Carroll's a high energy coach and, you know, maybe that's hurting the team. Like, who knows, man? Like all that just glossy exterior. You know what I'm talking about? That very thin level of coverage that people give a team. You know, the bad articles that are written by people that don't know crap about the team. It feels like that what Sherman Smith was saying was just the regular superlatives you always hear.
Well, I mean, I guess the main thing is that the fact that he was let go surprised him a little bit, because he talked about going into a meeting and Pete talking about making a change. And so it definitely wasn't Smith's idea to leave the team. And I guess the idea was they wanted more of a high energy coach leading the running backs team.
Yeah, I mean, for whatever reason. And it sounds like the fellow that we have being the running backs coach now was doing a lot of the day to day stuff anyways. So, I mean, what it sounded like to me is that Smith had maybe delegated a little too much. It was just kind of showing up and going through the motions a little bit. And Pete was like, all right, you know, give the job to the guy who's actually doing the job.
Yeah, maybe.
That's how it felt to me.
Yeah.
I mean, because when you're, how old is Sherman Smith? I mean, he's in his 60s, isn't
62,
he?
62, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
That's younger than our head coach, though.
Yeah, I know, but you're not the ambitious young pup that's like, you know, looking to make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, he earned the right to coast for a while, if that was indeed the case, even. Of course. Makes sense.
And the last bit before we get into our main topics, Dolphins defensive tackle Earl Mitchell visiting the Seahawks this week is a potential. Yeah, he was cut from the Dolphins. And a potential replacement for Tony McDaniel is how he's being talked about.
Sure. Okay. Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea what he would command on the open market and all that. But he's a guy that could come in and really play, you know, a lot like Tony McDaniel did. That just like that rotational player who's stout enough against the run and all of those things. I actually would like to see McDaniel back for another year, but
yeah, this guy's only 2 years younger, I think. At one point, he think he was making $4 million with the Dolphins, but the way his contract was structured, I think it was like $2 million last year. So, but yeah. For when there's, I think, three or four teams that he's going to visit, and you know, including the 49ers and the Broncos. So there could be some
there's some competition there. Now, again, that's going to come down to when you're a player, right? What motivates you? Is keep getting them checks? Is that what motivates you, or is it getting rings?
Mm-hmm.
And either way, I don't hate on the guys that go out there and just, you know, mercenary their way through the league and, you know, make a boatload of money. Have at it, Haas. If that makes you happy and that fills up your cup, great. But he might be one of those guys where he would prefer to win a championship rather than maybe chase the money, say, because, you know, like 49ers could pay him a lot of money.
Sure.
They got money.
The culture of the team. I mean, do you want to go to a place like San Francisco? It's been turned over by coaches and in the last few years. You know, you don't know.
For Shanahan?
Yeah. Who knows? So, or do you want to come to a place where people like playing for their coach and like coming to work? And that plays a part into it.
It can. It just depends on what motivates a guy. And I don't know the heart of Earl Mitchell, believe it or not.
No, but we may find out more. So. Yeah. Speaking of the Dolphins, we didn't win our Finzi from the Perfectville podcast.
Yeah, whatever, dude. That whole thing was rigged.
It was.
Like, it was rigged. I heard Brandon from a very reputable news source that there were at least 3 million dead voters that were boarding buses from New Hampshire in crossing state lines to vote for our competition.
That's how the AFC East got it.
Yeah.
All those New England area voters.
Mm-hmm. Illegally registered dead people voters. That's what it was.
Well,
dead people voters, otherwise known as zombie voters. And it's a serious problem. It's a serious problem in this Finzi's award.
Bleeding over from politics into sports podcasts. That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you think it's an institutional problem. It's not just people who vote for president. This is about like people who vote for, you know, sports podcasting awards. Like this is an institutional nationwide problem, and it must be investigated.
You have to think that if there's any money to be made off of illegal voting, mm-hmm. I mean, what are you going to do after presidential season is over? I mean, you go into sports podcast voting.
Yeah. I mean, you go where the money is, and clearly the money is in sports podcasts.
Well, I guess we'll need to allocate more of our in the flock donors money to
voter fraud,
to the Perfectville podcast to pay for our votes next year.
Yeah. Yeah. See, now you're getting it, Brandon. Now you're getting it.
Yeah.
We need more paid zombie voters.
All right, Adam, 2018 free agents, and credit a little bit to Aaron and Brandon Manitoba, because he brought the question forward to us. Should we re-sign Justin Britt in the offseason? It got us into looking at what other players we might want to consider among the Seahawks 2018 free agents. And I don't want to get to Justin Britt just yet, because I want to start with the guys that are making the most money. The guys the guys that would make a difference if we were to cut them, or, you know, potentially re-sign to restructure their deal. Guys that make a bigger difference against the cap. So let's start with Jimmy Graham.
Okay.
He's set to make $10 million this year and represents the biggest savings against the salary cap. If you cut him, the team saves $10 million it could use somewhere else. And I've seen some people on Facebook suggesting that they would prefer that the Seahawks actually re-sign Luke Wilson, one of the 2017 free agents, and dump Jimmy Graham and use that cost savings to get an offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. And just for comparison, Jack Doyle, a tight end for the Colts that most Seahawks fans probably have never heard of,
rightfully so.
But I was looking at guys just to get an idea of valuation for a tight end.
Yeah. So you found Captain Obscurity here. All right. Jack Doyle
for the Colts.
He sounds like a character from like 24 or something.
He does. Jack Bauer's brother-in-law.
Right.
But his market value, according to SpotTrack, they keep track of all of the salary caps and what players make. $6.2 million per year is what he's estimated. So just for a guy that's, you know, catching maybe 500-600 yards per year, from a quarterback like Andrew Luck. That's what a guy. So you can probably imagine Luke Wilson would be under that number, but Jimmy Graham clearly over that number. It's a good benchmark.
Sure.
I guess I want to look at it of whether or not we should cut a guy to save the money, whether or not we should re-sign him, considering he has one year left on his contract, or just let him play out his contract and make a decision next year.
Well, it's an interesting case, Brandon, because basically you just laid it out right there in the idea that to pay a league average tight end, you're going to pay him $6 million, right?
Right.
So you're going to pay Jimmy 10. Okay. So your effective cap savings when it's all said and done is somewhere in the $4 million range to go from arguably one of the top three tight ends in the league to just a dude.
Right.
Is that worth it to you? To me, that's a no-brainer. Hell no. Hell no. Because there's still money under the cap. It's not like the Hawks are right up against the cap. You can go out and get 2 to 3 offensive linemen that count $3 to $5 million against the cap. You can do that and still re-sign all these other guys and do what you need to do and sign your draft picks and all that. The idea to save $4 million to go from Jimmy Graham to Jack Doyle type caliber? No, thanks. I think I'll pass. So I would say I would restructure Jimmy Graham and redo his deal if he's willing to do a 3-year deal. I don't know what his agent would want to do and that sort of thing. I mean, maybe they would push for a 4 or 5 year kind of deal, but if he's willing to restructure for a 3-year deal, lower the cap number, give him a little security and maybe some guaranteed money once again up front, fine. Like I'm good with that. That would make the most sense to me. The idea of him playing out the last year of his contract, I would entertain that if Jimmy looked me square in the eye and he's like, I kind of like the idea of playing out my last year on my deal. Like that motivates me. I'm happy with that. I like the amount of cheese that I'm getting this year. And I like the idea that I can parlay 2 solid years together into another really huge contract. And I'd rather bet on myself. If he's happy with that, fine, play out your last year. But if he's not, and he's like Cam Chancellor or Michael Bennett, and he's like, dude, I'm on the last year of my deal. Let's go. Let's redo. Then re-up him. But no more than 3 years if it was me, because he is 30.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to start paying guys, you know, when you start looking at 34, 35, 36, like somewhere in there.
Yeah. And if you are looking at older tight ends, I was kind of surprised to see Martellus Bennett about the same age as Jimmy Graham, both mm-hmm. 30, and his market value about the same, $6 million per year. And, you know, who knows, maybe he'll get overpaid a little bit because he's a Super Bowl winner now.
Yeah. I don't know how the Patriots got him for $6 million.
It seems like he would command a little bit more.
Yeah.
Well, and that's just his market value. I'm not quite sure what he's making right now, but according to the website, that would be his market value is $6 million.
His market value. Oh, so those numbers that you talked about, those weren't what they actually make. Those are their current market value?
Current market value. Yeah, Jack Doyle's not making that much.
Oh.
Because he's coming off his rookie deal.
How do they know what his market value is until he goes to market?
Well, they take a look at what guys, based on their production, what they have made based on production at their current age. And so Jack Doyle being kind of a younger guy and having, you know, pretty average production for a tight end, that's what they kind of project that he would command on the open market.
Speculatory stuff there, man. That is,
well, you have to take a guess somehow.
that's a huge guess, man. I don't know. How many people would have guessed that Mike Bennett would have signed the lowball deal that he signed a few years back?
Yeah, well, I think that's what agents do. Agents look at the different averages from other team, you know, what other players are making, you know,
sure,
whether
you got
it's based
guys
on
that are benchmarks and things like that. Yeah.
So you have to start somewhere when you're in a negotiation with the team.
Right.
And I'm guessing that they're just kind of doing a very similar look at.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, Martellus Bennett, he didn't even make six last year. It was a little over 5.
So they were closer as far as his current market value to what he was making.
You know, when I look at Graham, you know, considering that he's going to be 31 next year, I'm not really sure that his numbers are going to be astronomical. I don't think he's going to go from a 900-yard season this year to, you know, a 1,300-yard season or 1,400-yard season. He might crack 1,000 yards next year, but I don't know if there's that much benefit into signing him now versus waiting another year, allowing him that extra year to play it out.
Just his attitude would be my point. Like if sure. he becomes sort of a cancer because, you know, he's angry about his contract.
Well, in that case, I could actually envision a trade scenario for Jimmy Graham You know, if you knew that Luke Wilson really wanted to stay in Seattle, if you knew that Jimmy Graham was looking when if he was on his way out after next year, if you knew he was going to leave after next year, why not trade him this offseason, get something for him, and then you do have that money to start building offensive line?
Sure, I guess it just depends on your feel as an organization as to how big of a future that Jimmy Graham has with the team. I mean, what is Pete Carroll's vision here? Because it's not so much that I want to see his numbers increase even more in yardage. I want to see it increase in touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's the difference. And I think you could see that a little bit more next year. But the idea of trading him with just 1 year left on his deal, we kind of saw the other day with the Miami Dolphins and Jacksonville Jaguars trading in a sense. I know they were two separate trades, but in a sense, Brandon Albert for Julius Thomas. Mm-hmm. So to get a legitimate, high quality starting left tackle in this league, say somebody like Jason Peters or something like that, then that's kind of your cost is star tight end.
A guy like Jimmy Graham, yeah. You're not referring to Brandon Albert as a star offensive lineman.
He's had years like that. He didn't have a good year this year. He's a good offensive lineman.
He's good. He hasn't stayed healthy. I mean, he's...
Neither is Julius Thomas. Oh, so, right. You know, 6-1 half and does the other.
Right. But Seahawks fans went through the whole period of having a left tackle with injury issues with Russell Okung. And, right. And most Seahawks fans are ready to try something different. And really? Now it seems like this offseason, we're like, oh, well, maybe Russell Okung would be all right.
I was going to say, get ready to have another season of it, because that seems like a plausible thing to me. The idea that Okung could come back for another year.
Sure.
Depending on what he wants to make. But... And kind of what the market bears. I don't know what that little website says about his market value, but
I'm sure it's somewhere in the range of what he made last year. Because what did he end up with his contract around $8 million?
Yeah,
and he started with six, you know, with bonuses and that sort of thing. I would imagine him around $7-8 million for his market value.
Right, but yeah, you could trade Jimmy Graham and try to get somebody like Jason Peters, who's supposedly the Eagles are interested in shopping. Guy who's a little longer in the tooth, but a heck of a left tackle. You know, maybe you get a year or two out of him. I guess it just depends on your overall vision. If you're the Seahawks, if the idea is that you're going to reload and go for it this year, then yeah, maybe that's something you do. I think Jimmy has more value on the team than trading for some high priced left tackle somewhere. I truly believe we can find somebody like Kelvin Beachum or something along those lines. Or even Okung, mm-hmm. somebody along those lines, where you can get him in under the cap, and you get George Fant another year to sit behind and learn. And I think that would be ideal.
Well, and one point to make too with the Julius Thomas, Brandon Albert situation between Jacksonville and Miami, what they're talking about right now, those are non-binding. Those actually can't be reported to the league until March 9th when the free agency period starts. So. Any news that's coming out now, I wonder about the news. Why this would actually come out? Like, do you leak it to see if there's any other teams that are willing to maybe chip in and make a better offer, knowing that it's not binding?
Well, there's a lot of reasons that teams leak information, and for one reason that I think in this case makes sense to me, this trade's going to go down. Yeah, this is one that's going to go down. I truly believe that, and. The idea is that the people in the Jags organization and people in the Miami organization that do have relationships with the press and things like that, you got to keep those relationships good. You got to give them something so that they look like they're on the inside. Mm-hmm. You got to kind of grease those skids. So, yeah, you release something like this. It's no consequence if it gets released beforehand or not, because the trade's going to go down. So you throw the reporter a bone. They're happy. Then the next time you do need to leak information to try to, say, change a contract negotiation or the idea of putting pressures on other teams for trades and things like that, now you have that guy that you can go to. This is like a freebie. I'm gonna give you a little red meat. Here you go, reporter. And so they can talk about it. And again, gives the league something to talk about for the next couple weeks while we wait for the draft.
All right, well, let's move on to the next guy, Cam Chancellor, on that list. because we are going in order of the amount of money you could save by cutting a guy. And Cam Chancellor, you'd have $1 million of a prorated bonus that you'd have to eat. The dead money is what they refer that to. Money that's already been paid to him. But you could save $7.1 million by cutting the 28-year-old strong safety. So and in terms of total contract value, the one thing that's interesting about Cam is he's still at the top of the league. Rashad Jones, a Dolphins strong safety, he got a four-year $28 million deal with $15 guaranteed. His contract beat out Cam's by just $10,000. So they're essentially even. And but that just goes to show you that that's a big reason why Cam's deal hasn't been looked at. He's been paid at the top of the league over the last 4 years,
which you and I agree on. He's been paid as the top strong safety, but Cam doesn't see that that way. He looks at safety as a position, free safety or strong safety. And when he looks at it, he says, I'm not even close to being the most top or the highest paid safety in the league. So that's his beef. That is something that I would forever disagree with him on. It's like saying tackle's tackle, so pay me at right tackle what you pay people at left tackle. Well, tackle's not tackle.
Yeah.
You know, I understand they both end in tackle, but you know, there's a word in front of it that differentiates.
Right.
Much like strong and free. So yeah, he's been well compensated up to this point. I don't know, what was his cap hit for this year going in?
It's 8 million. Yeah. It's the 7 million and then the 1 million dead money. So it's 8.1. And so you would save the seven if you decided to cut it.
No matter
what,
you're paying $1 million.
Right.
So I wonder by restructuring exactly how much that would spread out the cap hit over the next 2-3 years. But this, I'm going to give you a similar answer that I gave you with Jimmy Graham. I would love to see them re-sign Cam Chancellor on a 2-3 year deal.
To me, I think Cam is the guy who's an example that you want to set for the other players. You know, at 28, I would give him, much like you said with Jimmy Graham, I wouldn't want to give him much more than a 3-year extension. So he'd have a 4-year, say, $31 million deal. If a 4-year, $31 million deal would be above any strong safety contract in terms of both the average salary per year and total contract size. The most we've seen total contract size for a strong safety is $30 million, which was a 5-year deal for what George, the dude for the Bengals, Iloka.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So you would beat out his contract. You'd have all the numbers as strong safety to put you at the top of the league. And then, you know, the team always seems to structure it so the team has control over the last 2 years, because I know we've talked about with Cam Chancellor, you know, the idea of his body breaking down because of how physical he is. But there's no saying that he can't play a good 10, 11 year career at that position.
Oh, I think it's very much within reason that he could do that for sure. I mean, I look at Cam and I think that you're going to have two more Cam Chancellor type years, and then you'll really start to see a decline. That's just how I feel about it. You know, there's a lot of science behind that, but the idea that, yeah, okay, so it ends up being total a 4-year deal that's $31 million, whatever. He's never going to see the last year or two of that deal. It's about how much guaranteed money you end up putting in there in that sort of thing. So sure, make the contract look nice and shiny so that, you know, he's quote unquote the highest paid player at the strong safety position. So he has his pride and, you know, it looks good on paper. And then if he overperforms, and you want to keep him for, you know, the entirety of the contract, there you are. You got him. You got him under contract.
Well, that's kind of how this contract worked, because when we saw that initial contract, we look at, you know, geez, an $8 million cap hit in his final year of his contract. But now you look at it and you go, $8 million for, you know, one of the top three strong safeties in the league. That's right about where it should be. If he plays out his final year, then fine. It's not a number you look at and you go, we aren't going to get that kind of performance. We definitely need to cut him.
And not only that, but the cap keeps going up and up and up. So the earlier you re-sign these guys, the better you are long term, because you get them at a lower market rate. And at the end of the day, when it comes down towards the end of the contracts, the cap has gone up so stinking much over the last few years that you're more ahead of the game when it's all said and done. You're going to see when free agency starts this year, you're going to see a lot of really dumb money being thrown around.
Oh, yeah.
So
well, we saw it last year.
Yeah, if you want to restructure these guys, you do it right now.
Yeah.
Do it right now before some of these crazy contracts come out that set the market value at a totally different level.
And one thing, looking back at Cam, I was really kind of surprised because, yeah, he's had a couple years where he's missed a few games here and there. He missed two games in 2014. He missed a couple more in 2015 in addition to the games that he held out for. And they missed four this last year. But he's played six full seasons. And when you just consider, you know, a couple for how physical he plays, that he just missed a couple games here and there. Mm-hmm. I went back. We make the Bob Sanders comparison quite a bit. And so I went back and looked at just to see how many seasons Bob Sanders played healthy and hurt. He only had 2 years where he played the full season. And he was right. He was first team all pro in both those two seasons.
Yeah.
But only two full healthy seasons.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. So,
yeah, exactly. So you can see Cam's been more durable than that, but Cam's also way larger guy than Bob Sanders.
Sure. Yeah. That's a good point too.
Yeah. I mean, he's more built like Steve Atwater a little bit, you know, or Ronnie Lott. So, and those guys had long careers too, and they were big hitters.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's no reason to believe that he can't do it. And on top of that, I mean, you talk about the spirit that Cam brings to this team. I mean, and who he is and what he means on a leadership position and things like that. It's just too important. It's just too important. I mean, if you're really locked in to try to make a championship run the next, you know, 2-3 years with this kind of core of talent, then Cam Chancellor's got to be one of those guys. He's got to be. And I would take Cam over Jimmy.
Yeah. Yeah. If you put him in order, I would put Cam one and Jimmy two. We've now talked about two guys where you could have saved $17 million. And we're actually not saving anything. So,
yes, you are saving though. If you restructure and re-sign, you are saving.
Yes.
So maybe you don't say 17. Maybe you save seven. You can go out and actually spend money and get another reasonably priced offensive lineman at that.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to give up on saving us money just yet. I want to look at, before we move on to the last two guys that are coming into their final year. I want to talk about three players who their contracts expire in 2019, but they represent in order the amount of money that you could cut and save on guys that have multiple years left. So,
sure.
And you can just say no right away to these guys if you want. Okay. But Earl Thomas is the next guy on the list.
No,
nope. He stays
on the team.
Yeah. But just for informational purposes, you would save a little over $6.5 million
mm-hmm.
against
and
the Cavs.
I'd also lose my mind watching us give up bombs down the seam.
Yeah, no, it's worth it for your sanity, and he's a really good player
in team success. Yeah,
yeah. The other guy in 2019, KJ Wright, $4.8 million is what you would save by cutting him.
That's chump change for a guy who's arguably the best at his position. No.
Right.
I'll keep him.
Okay. Well, the third guy on the list, we're running out of room to save money. Cliff Averill, $4.5 million.
Absolutely not. You keep Cliff Averill.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we've now gone through all the guys that if you're looking to save more than $1 million against the cap,
I'm not though. See, that's the thing. We have cap space.
We do.
Restructure those two contracts we talked about right at the beginning. You have even more cap space and you keep all these same dudes. This team doesn't need an overhaul, man. I'm not getting rid of all these guys.
Pointing it out there for people who want to make their own decisions based on
we ain't clipping talent. Contract coupons today, okay?
All right. Well, there's only one guy left if you want to save $1 million against the cap.
Okay.
And you could do that if you wanted to cut Paul Richardson. And a guy who's shown flashes of greatness, but there are some injury concerns. He played 15 games in 2014, his rookie season, played 15 mm-hmm. games last year. He actually started six games in 2014, and then he sat out almost all of the 2015 season.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I was impressed by, yards per reception this last year, 13.7.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's on his 21 catches, and then 18.7 yards per reception in the playoffs on his seven catches.
Yes.
Should we cut, re-sign, or have Paul Richardson play out his contract?
Oh, re-sign Paul Richardson right now.
Yeah?
Re-sign him right now. His value is not going to get any lower.
No.
I mean, unless he gets hurt again. So, yeah, re-sign him. You run out the clock with Curse on his contract. And now you have another guy to throw out there with Lockett and Baldwin, you know, as you start to phase out Curse, if that's in your mind, or if Curse comes on and has another bounce back year and you decide that Paul Richardson is redundant because now you're looking at Paul Richardson or Tyler Lockett, right, for playing time. I mean, you tell me who you're going to pick. I'm taking Lockett. So at that point, now you got a trade chip who's under team control.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, re-up the guy.
Oh, yeah. I like Paul Richardson as a trade chip. And if you could re-sign him for a Jermaine Kearse type deal, because I think in terms of his production, he's had less production than Jermaine Kearse. But I think because you're taking that risk of re-signing him because of the injury concerns, I would think that that would be about kind of that ideal contract area for.
I would say less than Kearse.
Well, I would want it to be that way. But I also think that a guy like Paul Richardson, it would be unlikely to
sign
agree
for
to
less
it.
Than Kearse.
No, to sign a deal at all, because if you're looking at something less than Kearse, why would Paul Richardson sign that? Why wouldn't he go into the final year of his deal wanting to prove the fact that he could be the type of player that we saw flashes of in the playoffs?
It just depends on your mentality. Sure. This is where I might differ from some of these NFL players, right? Like, they all have supreme confidence in their bodies and in being able to do all this and everything. Man, if I'm Paul Richardson, I'm looking at that and being like, damn, man, like, I haven't been able to hold this together at all. And I'm getting some guaranteed money thrown my way right now that I can invest smartly in everything. And if in another 2 years my body can't handle this, I'm set and my family's set forever if I'm smart about it. Sign me up. I would sign for that security over gambling on myself on another year if my body had betrayed me in the same way that Paul Richardson's has.
Yeah, with it only being 1 year, though, to me, if I put myself right in those shoes.
Just 1 year. Yeah.
Well, 1 year of being injured, but you don't know what could happen this next year. You know, what if, God forbid, a guy like Doug Baldwin goes down and Paul Richardson's the guy that gets to step into that role? And then all of a sudden you see him have a Doug Baldwin type career, you know, just a huge year where he's mm-hmm. the primary target and vice Doug Baldwin. And then he's going out on the open market looking at that kind of contract money.
A lot that's of ifs the type, right there.
Well, that's the type of gamble, though, that could really pay off. And if it doesn't and you just put in the same type of production that you did last year, well, the contract that you talked about, the Jermaine Kearse type deal or less, would probably still be on the table. Unless you get hurt.
Yeah, it wouldn't. It absolutely wouldn't. And look, if I'm Paul Richardson, I'm also looking at it as the idea that there's a, I would say, substantial chance that Tyler Lockett doesn't start the season playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are minutes that you're going to be able to get and go out there and try to prove yourself. But yeah, it's just a lot of ifs, man. That's a lot of ifs. And I'm a guy that's had my knee blow up on me twice.
Yeah, once in college and then once in the pros.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just telling you what I would do. I'll just tell you what I would do.
Oh, it makes sense. I like the different perspectives because we don't have the ability to know what these guys, truly feel and what they take into account when they're thinking about accepting a contract negotiation.
Yeah, yeah. It's just everybody's motivated by different things. I'm not as money motivated as most people. In fact, I'm
very much security motivated.
Yeah. So it would be an easy decision for me. I mean, is Jermaine Kearse living a terrible lifestyle?
I think he's not doing fun things.
I think he's doing all right. So that kind of money, you're going to be all right.
And that might be a scenario too, where a guy like Paul Richardson, you take a 2 year extension, and that way you're looking at a contract a little bit sooner than you would if you're taking a longer term deal.
Yeah, those are all interesting options with him. But again, we're talking about a guy that counts a million against the cap. I mean, again, it's
so far you're re-signing everybody though. This you're a good GM, Adam. You're just re-sign everybody.
Sure. I mean, if you comply and it makes sense for us. I guess I'm just really, my mentality, if I'm John Schneider right now, is we have a 2 to 3 year window with this core group of players, and I'm going for it. And I'm going to have to keep these core players and be able to find two reasonably priced offensive linemen that you can plug in there for 2 years. And I think you can get all that done by with still re-signing these guys with the cap space that you already have. I think you can do that.
Well, this last one is one of the more intriguing options to me, because speaking of offensive linemen who can play, Justin Britt did not fall into that category going into this 2016 season. Coming out of the 2016 season, I think you would put him in that category, especially from what we saw from him. So now you have Justin Britt going into the final year of his contract. He's making just under $900,000. Do you re-sign him? Resign him early right now? Do you cut him? I would say no to that. Or do you go ahead and do you sign him now with the idea that, yes, we saw 1 year from him and that's what we're going to see from him going forward? Or do you look back at those first two seasons and go, those make me a little nervous. Hopefully he doesn't revert to that after we sign him to a deal.
If you're playing out that last year, the deal, we get 3/4 of the way through the season and they renegotiate with you like KJ Wright, you know, guys like that. That's exactly how I do that. I need to see it again. So no, I'm not doing anything with
Britt. I fall into that camp as well with Justin Britt, but this is a guy too that Tom Cable clearly likes. I mean, considering the number of chances that he's had each to go from right tackle to left guard to center. And but just the fact that Britt's been able to fight through it is commendable. But I do feel like you, as a fan, I want to see it for a full year.
That was a homer statement if I've ever heard one right there, man. That was a homer statement big time. The fact that he sucked nuts for 2 years at two other positions and then found one that he's pretty good at, that's pretty commendable. What a yeoman's effort.
I think there are a lot of guys that wouldn't fight through that, though.
Maybe
because he could have said,
is Justin Britt going to do in life? Said
when they came to him, we want you to try center, and him be like, yeah, not really into learning the third position.
Right. Because he had so many options. I don't think that there was much of a choice there,
but yeah, I suppose not. Well, it's either get cut or, you know, I say that you don't want to play football anymore.
Right. Yeah, you're basically saying I'm not going to play football anymore if you don't switch to center when they ask you to at that point. Because who's picking you up?
No.
Nobody.
No. I saw an interesting article, went back and looked at the 2014 draft. One of those things where it's post-draft grading on the 2014 draft. They're interesting to go back and look at now. Now that's been a couple of years.
Yeah, about 3 years out.
Just to see what people said. And Justin Britt on this one article, there was shock at the fact that the Seahawks reached for him in the second round because they did not have him on their draft board.
He wasn't even a draftable player in their eyes.
Yeah, Garrett Scott, who they took in the sixth round, was on the draft board ahead of Justin Britt. And that was the dude with the heart condition that ended up not playing.
Yeah, so we have no idea. We have no idea. He could have been awesome, for all we know. Probably would have been, too, would be my guess. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, that's the list of free agents. You have a couple other guys that are coming up on the end of their rookie contracts with Cassius Marsh and Kevin Pierre-Louis. But do you want to say anything about either of those guys?
Yeah, I'm not giving you any new money.
Let them play out their final year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, you don't have to apologize to me.
No, I was apologizing to them. Sorry, not sorry. You know.
Well, now that we've taken a look at the 2018 guys, let's look at the 2017 restricted free agents. We looked last week at the unrestricted free agents and whether or not to re-sign those guys. There's a couple guys who are interesting in the restricted free agent category. And what's helpful to know about restricted free agents, they're going into they have a tender amount that they could sign for. And or teams can actually place restricted, like they can place a tag on each one of these players. One would be the lowest level possible for any of these players would be the right of first refusal. So if another team going into their restricted free agent season, another team come along and say, I want to pay Stephen Terrell, you know, $1.5 million. And then the Seahawks would be able to say, we want to match that or buy Stephen. And right. Or you can add a second round tender to a player, which would go into the category of maybe a guy like Deshaun Shedd, where the team gets right of first refusal.
The opportunity to, yeah, opportunity to match. And then if he signs with the other team,
they get a second round pick.
Or if you get a second round pick. Exactly.
And then there's a first round tender, which is the same thing as a second round, except you get a first round pick.
Right.
If you put that the lowest level tender on him to have right of first refusal, you're paying a guy last year. They paid players $1.6 million for the opportunity to have that right of first refusal.
Right.
Second round pick, you're paying them upwards of $2.5 million, and first round pick, you're putting them above $3.6 million. Right. Those are the 2016 mounts. They'll go up a little bit, but about that gives you an idea of what you're working with in terms of salary.
Billion and a half, 2 million and a half, 3 million and a half, somewhere in there, depending on which you give them. And it might be a little more than that. Maybe it'll be, 2 million, 3 million, sure. And 4 million.
So running down the list, restricted free agent, there's just six guys: Deshaun Shedd, Stephen Terrell, Ronald Powell, who played outside linebacker, Dewey McDonald, who's a strong safety, Gary Gilliam, and Brock Coyle.
Right.
Out of those guys, is there anybody that you'd put a first round tender on?
No.
How about a second?
Yes, Deshaun Shedd.
Okay, Deshaun Shedd.
Yeah, that's easy peasy to me. And the only reason that I wouldn't put a first round tender on him is that he blew up his entire knee towards the end of the season. And that would be something that would give the rest of the league pause when they're looking to maybe pay the guy. So the idea being is that I don't know that anybody's going to come with a large offer at Deshaun Shedd. But even if they did, you have the ability to match if you want. But to find somebody that is a starting level right corner that played at the level that he did this last year, I mean, that's about a second round guy that you're looking at. So that seems fair to me. And then not only that, if nobody comes at him with extra money, which I kind of doubt they would, considering the injury, $2.5-3 million for the services of a quality starting right corner. Yes, please. Yeah, sign me up for that every day. Talk about places you save money.
Really, it's about $1 million gamble if you were to put the opportunity for the Seahawks to have the opportunity to match the salary. If you give them, we'll say $2 million,
sure,
versus $3 million. $3 million, you're guaranteed to get a second round pick if anybody comes at him and offers them a contract. If you just give them two, then you may lose him because they're going to give him a better than a $2 million deal.
Right, and you get nothing. Yeah, no, I'm going to be damn sure I get at least a second round pick.
Okay,
for a starter, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It's just I'm curious. I'll be interested to see how the Seahawks approach this, if they're willing to take that little bit of risk to save them about $1 million.
No, not on that guy. Not on that guy.
And really, to me, I don't know if there's anybody else on this list. Gary Gilliam may be the one guy that you'd look at and go, do you give him 1.7?
No. Hey, Tell me one team that values him at $1.7 million.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. We've seen guys like J.R. Sweezy go to...
Right, but a lot of people thought that he could play. Nobody thinks Gary Gilliam can play.
Yeah, the Seahawks, they didn't even think he was going to play for one point of the season.
Right.
When they had Brad Saul go in there.
Exactly.
And he was...
They were looking to replace him as fast as possible, is in Gilliam.
$500,000 for Gary Gilliam and Brock Coyle.
Oh, that's their tender amount. All right. Well, I mean, they make about that anyway, don't they?
They can either sign their tender for $500,000 or they don't get to play next year, or another team comes along and says, I'll pay you more than $500,000.
Right. And you have the right to first refusal at that point then too, or no, that bumps you up to the million and a half.
That bumps you up to the million and a half. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They'll play out their tender. You're not going to pay them more than $500,000.
Yeah, and considering we haven't seen Ronald Powell or Dewey McDonald really on the field, I would expect they'll sign their tenders as well.
Yes, exactly.
All right, Adam, what do you say we move on to the second half of the show? Got a little bit of a Seahawks USA Today article I want to talk about after the break, and get into some do better and better at life.
Sounds like a plan. Stick around, folks.
Getting into the second half of the show. Man, Adam, that felt like a longer than normal break in between our first half and second half.
Yeah. Well, it did seem like a fairly long break. I mean, there was a whole night that, that happened and you know, a few other life events. Yeah, it was a long break,
but nobody else would know. So we're on to the second half. And yes, one thing I wanted to throw out there, I think we're going to do a bonus show coming up here pretty soon. Now, we aren't doing our normal weekly show bonus shows like we had been during the season, although I guess we didn't always hit that weekly mark either. But no. I saw this and I thought it'd be a good idea for a bonus show. I want to throw this out to you, Adam.
Okay.
On USA Today, the Seahawks wire, one of the writers there put out the three worst free agent signings of the Pete Carroll era.
Okay.
And I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on this. So you don't have to share it all now, but here are the three guys. And I think
Matt Flynn.
Well, Matt Flynn is definitely on this list.
Okay.
And he's the one that I know belongs on this list.
Okay.
But I think if we throw this out there to our members of the flock, I think they're going to chime in with some guys who would be more deserving of being on this list. The other two guys that are on this list, two wide receivers. Okay. Mm-hmm. One is Mike Williams.
The other one's probably T.O.
No, because, it could have been. But Sidney Rice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's unfair.
Yeah, I kind of thought so.
Yeah, okay.
It was the Seahawks signed him to a 5-year, $41 million deal.
Yeah, I'm aware.
And maybe he didn't live up to quite that contract amount.
I guess. I mean, that's something that I'm sure a few people would argue. I mean, that was kind of in the infancies of the offense and the infancies of, you know, Russell Wilson's career. And like, I don't know. I mean, his body failed him a little bit, but look, Sidney Rice, I mean, he made some big plays still.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he wasn't like a Deion Branch kind of failure.
Oh, no. No, huh. And that's why I was a little bit surprised to see him. I know there's four or five
not that Deion Branch was signed by Pete Carroll. But
and he was traded for. But, you know, the trades thing never works out for the Seahawks.
Right, right. Because your initial thought would probably be Percy. But again, traded for. So.
Right. Yeah. And this isn't taking into account any trades. This is just free agent contract signings. So keep that in mind. Throwing that out there to the members of the flock. I want to hear what you have to think. If you have a guy who is a bigger bust at free agent signing, I want to make a good case for it. I want to hear it.
There we go. Okay.
All right. Well, speaking of members of the flock, we have a new one. Welcome to the flock to Charlie Malmberg. He is in for a sticker and bonus episodes. So welcome to the flock, Charlie.
Yeah. Welcome, Charlie. And you get to have that conversation about, you know, top three busts coming your way here shortly.
Exactly. And also got a donation from Jason Kyler Yano. Sent in a note. He said, because it's the off season.
Awesome. I appreciate it, man. Because it is. It's tough doing this throughout the off season. Like today's a monster struggle for me. Like, so yeah, I know it's tough. So we appreciate the donations. It helps keep us motivated and going, no doubt.
Indeed. And so what keeps us motivated is when we see reviews, and got a nice one here from Film Geek 2001 titled Great Podcast. I've been trying to find some way to know everything that's going on with the Hawks. Very happy I found this podcast. Not only are you guys very informative, but both of you are very entertaining to listen to. Can't wait to listen to you guys for seasons to come.
Dude, well, thank you very much. What was it? It was a video.
Film Geek 2001.
Film Geek 2001. That's a solid screen name.
Yeah.
But yeah, appreciate the review, man. Everybody that does put in a review, put in your two cents, you know, good, bad, and different. It helps people find the show. And also, too, when they look through, I don't know about you, Brandon, but when I go through iTunes and I'm looking at different shows, I see one that has like 7 ratings and one with, you know, 180 some. And I'll usually click on the one with 180 some because that been around enough or is decent enough for people to have put their kind of time into at least just click the stars, right? And so it's a thing that helps us stand out from the other podcasts there in the Seahawks genre. So for all you that do that, thank you, and keep it up.
Well, and I don't know if you know this, but there's actually podcasts out there that try and get people to review their show who don't even listen to the show. So, you know, trying to milk the whole review system. You know, when there's 180 reviews, like there's no way that I would go through that much effort to try and get fake reviews to that number.
No. And my mom can't create, you know, 180 fake Apple accounts.
I know. She can only do so many.
Yeah. So we know it's legit.
Well, thanks for the reviews. Thanks to the new members of the flock. If you want to get in the flock, you can go to getintheflock.com and sign up there. We'll be doing that all off season. We're at, I think we're up to, we're at 159 and we're shooting for 300 by the beginning of the season. So getintheflock.com. All right, Adam, what do you say we get on to do better and better at life?
All right, man. My do better this week is for CBS.com writer for the NFL section, John Breach, with his article that came out here. I don't know. This was maybe about a week or so ago. 2017 NFL strength of schedule. Colts have it easiest. Broncos face a slate of doom. Freaking stupid.
Doom.
You don't know the strength of schedule. You don't know the strength of schedule. We have this every single stupid year. People come out and they're like, oh, well, you know, look at our strength of schedule as we go into the season. You don't know what it is going to be. You don't know if Alex Smith and the entire offensive line for the Chiefs is going to go down week one. And then when by the time you face them, like they're depleted. You don't know if like AFC South somehow becomes hyper competitive and they all have amazing years. You don't know if a team like the Carolina Panthers go from losing one game in the Super Bowl and then end up going, what, like 4-12 last year? Nobody knows. It's the NFL. You can't predict the strength of schedule. Stop it. It's stupid. I know you have to fill copy. Find a better way. This is a waste of life for everybody. John Breach, do better.
You could go back and look at the strength of schedule from last season. I mean, that's at least a measurable result, because I remember going into this last season that the Seahawks had one of the highest strength of schedules. And again, right. You don't know that. And it turns out that the Seahawks had one of the easiest schedules.
Right. And not only that, but it's just a matter of how many teams face the Patriots this year without Tom Brady, you know, the first four, or you just never know. Like you're down that key player for two games when you happen to face that team. Just dumb.
Well, speaking of some dopes like that CBS reporter, if once is a coincidence, twice is a trend, and three times is a you problem.
Yeah.
Former Lions cornerback Stanley Wilson has a you problem.
Okay.
Stanley Wilson II, arrested while naked for a third time.
What? But I mean, like, do they keep charging into his bedroom or something? Like, what's going on here?
No, this is out in public. And
he just likes to get naked in public. Huh?
He enjoys being naked in the outdoors. And this is the third time. And this is 7 months after getting shot while trying to break into a home 7 months ago while naked. So only has this happened on the second time he got arrested for being naked, he also got shot.
Right. Not like, enough of a deterrent.
Not enough of a deterrent. He's back at it.
Wow. So maybe we're looking at this the wrong way. Maybe he's really dedicated. Like he's a dedicated, like, prowling nudist. That's what it is.
I think he is dedicated to something. And I think Stanley should have listened to our show last week, because one of our key messages in Your Better at Life last week was don't do meth.
Yeah, and don't do meth.
Stanley, I think, is dedicated to meth. So.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Is that part of the problem here? He is legitimately smoking the meth, huh?
At least that was one of his arrests on his record. So I'm assuming these things are linked in some way.
Right. Yeah. They're not standalone things.
No.
You feel like if you smoke some meth, there's a high chance you could end up naked breaking into somebody's house.
And getting shot, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, that's 50-50. In Montana, that's a certainty.
Uh-huh. This is Oregon, so it's like 50-50.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So Stanley, stop doing meth, stop getting shot, stop getting naked, and do better.
Do better, man. Man, those are some life choices that need to be reevaluated, no doubt about it.
I'm almost certain that if I had been arrested after the second time being naked and getting shot, I think I would make some life changes.
Getting shot would be a very powerful motivator for me, I would think.
I think so.
That'd be one that'd be like, maybe I need to learn a life lesson here. Right. Maybe there's something here that I need to think about and try to comprehend better. So, yeah. Oh,
can I just make a confession here?
Yeah.
I've never been shot once.
Not once?
No.
Oh. How about with a paintball gun?
No.
No.
Not interested.
How about a BB gun?
No.
No. Huh. Well, I've definitely been shot by both of those. But we used to have BB gun wars as a kid. Don't try that at home. It's a bad idea.
I don't even like getting shot with a syringe when, you know, getting blood drawn.
Yeah, does that freak you out a little bit?
Well, it just, you know, any, yeah, it just, it's not pleasant.
Depends on the size of the syringe, you know? I mean, from all my years of, you know, doing heroin, I'm pretty down with syringes, so.
That was only to get off the meth, though.
Right, yeah. Well, you got to lean yourself off. Yeah, so I went to the heroin, and then I went to crack, uh-huh. and then from crack cocaine, then I just downstepped to weed. So that's basically where I am now. So it works out.
I think that is the progression.
Yeah, exactly. See, that what was that? That's a 5-step program is what that is right there.
Adam Eppert does not represent medical advice on the show. Just
that's
disclaimer.
Exactly right. He's not a professional in any way, shape, or form in the medical field. Let's talk about some people who are professionals.
Yes,
Randy.
Yes. Let's get on to Better at Life.
Okay. Better at Life than Skip Bayless this week is freaking NASA, Brandon. It's not the first time I've made NASA my Better at Life, and it won't be the freaking last because NASA does awesome stuff, and they do it all the time. Oh, you know, like today when they came out and they're like, hey, if you look, check out the star TRAPPIST-1 over here. It not only has one Earth-sized rocky planet around it, not two, not three. It has 7 freaking planets that zing around it, Earth-sized. 3 of them happen to be in the quote-unquote Goldilocks zone where there could be liquid water. Now, what's really cool is that next year the James Webb telescope gets shot up into space, and it's going to be able to look at this crap with even more detail because it's not far away. It's only 44 light years away, and we can be able to tell what these atmospheres are made of, if it really does have water on the surfaces of these planets, and we could actually find a second Earth within the next year or two. We may have already found it. We just may be able to confirm it. This is amazing stuff. This should blow your little mind on our little tiny blue marble circling around our tiny sun in this giant universe. NASA, you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
I was thinking about this when I saw this news report today. Are we going to find out in the next 10 years that there is life on another planet?
Not on another planet. I bet you we find it on a moon.
Okay.
It'll be either Europa.
Another, yes.
Heavenly body? Yeah.
Not heavenly body. Another.
That's what they called it. They called the planets and the moons and the stars heavenly bodies. That's what the Greeks called it.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez, get on board. the most likely candidates for life in our solar system off of the Earth right now tend to be like Enceladus or Titan or Europa. You know, some of the Jovian moons, some of the Saturn moons. So I would suspect that we would have a chance at that. Now, we got to fund it, you know, so we'll see if that happens because God knows we need more military instead of like sending probes to moons and finding out if there's other life in the solar system. That's not important.
And if only we could shoot something out there fast enough to get it there in 44 light years.
Yeah. So they were talking about that a little bit today. And so basically there's a kind of a cool app. I can't remember what it was called, but basically you could plug in like, all right, if I was in a jet plane, how long would it take me to get there? And it was something like 45 million years.
Jeez.
That's how far 44 light years is. But yeah. There is also the potential too, Brandon, that there is a habitable zone planet around Alpha Centauri, which is the closest star four light years away from the Earth. That's the closest star to ours. And there is a planet that circles that, but we don't know its composition quite yet. But there is a mission being proposed called Starshot, where you take a bunch of little robots that are like the size of postage stamps.
Mm-hmm.
You toss like 1,000 of them up there, and then you build like a giant gigawatt laser and basically shoot that at your little spacecraft and start to accelerate them with pulses of laser light, much like a light sail kind of, right? And you could accelerate it to something like, I want to say it was like 15% the speed of light or something like that. It would get there in like 20 years.
Mm.
And now we wouldn't be able to slow down. These little bastards would just like fly by, you know, like a bat out of hell,
take a bunch of pictures, and then we'd have to wait like another 5 years for the information to come back. But, you know, eventually it'd get there.
Interesting.
So there's some signs for you today, people.
Yeah,
not well, football related. It's the off season. Deal with it.
In the off season, I'm looking for the Adam Emmert Science Podcast to get started up here.
No, this is enough work for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
My Better at Life this week is for something more football related. And it's for CBS chairman Les Moonves. And this TV executive talked to Roger Goodell here this last week about speeding up NFL games. And this needs to happen. And not just by limiting the number of commercial breaks, but just the whole how much time it takes, not just with commercials, but when you have the touchdown, then you have to confirm it, and then you have to kick the extra point, and then you have the kickoff. And, you know, and there's commercials usually in between the extra point and the kickoff, and then the kickoff and the start of the next drive. Mm-hmm. If you can find a way to shorten that just a little bit, I think we would all be a lot happier.
Oh, not to mention replay.
Like, oh, yeah.
How is it? I cannot understand it for the life of me that we can, as the viewer, have seen the replay three times before the official even gets to the booth, and then it takes him forever under the hood to finally make the call when, like, we all looked at it, it was like, oh no, that's a catch, or oh no, that's, you know, that's a fumble, not a fumble, whatever. Like, you, how many times, like, the easy calls? There's got to be a way. I mean, we have cell phones and crap, like, texts happen pretty quick. Like, you can't tell me that Dino Blandino can't be sitting there in the league office, and when somebody scores a touchdown and they do the quick review, he can't just text yes or no to the head ref, and he can just like pull it out like with an instantaneous confirmation and have that whole process sped up to 10 seconds instead of like 3 minutes.
Yeah, usually the touchdown confirmations come pretty quickly.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, even on the replay, yeah, the replay stuff,
you don't need to go under the hood
every time. No, you should be able to have an official back at the league office just be like, you know, catch, no catch, fumble, no fumble, like, and send you a direct message right into your little headset even.
Yeah.
Like, it should be that fast. I mean, we live in 2017. We find out about planets. Like, how can football move this slow?
Exactly. So just the fact that they're talking about it, I think this is a step in the right direction. And because there are moments where I should not have 10 minutes just to check Twitter in between a couple plays, like max 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah. So really what you're saying is that the breaks in football don't match the amount of time you want to be on Twitter is really what the problem is.
Right. 10 minutes is too long.
Okay. Well, all I know is it does help me when I'm actually trying to engage with everybody on the social medias during the game. It actually gives me time to like hunt and peck out like my, you know, 3-word response to something that takes me like 10 minutes.
So maybe you're not so much for the.
No, I'm for the speeding up a game. I just need like a real keyboard to attach to my tablet or something.
Ah.
So I can type like a real person.
Yeah, you do need that. So.
Yeah.
But yes, my Better at Life for bringing this to Roger Goodell's attention. It's going to take a TV executive to make this happen.
Good point.
And Les Moonves, Better at Life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, great. You think anybody can do that in baseball? Anybody from like Fox or somebody going to go and knock on Bud Selig's door? Is he even still the commissioner?
But do people still watch baseball on TV?
Yeah, there's a few people that do.
All right, Adam. Well, I am excited to talk free agents next week. Already have the episode title set up even.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Title all ready to rock and the whole thing.
Making the case for Tony Romo a quarterback.
Are you trying to put Boykin out of a job?
No, it's all about my clickbait game. I got to get that strengthened.
Gotcha. You know, I feel like every beat reporter that in Kansas City must be working that game, because everybody's clamoring about Romo going to Kansas City. Why would you do that?
Yeah, Alex Smith is.
He plays.
He survives hits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that makes zero sense to me. Guy, it's been in the system for like 5 years. You replace him with 1 year of Romo at best.
Denver's the only place that makes sense for Romo.
It makes the most sense, yeah. Except for the fact that their offensive line was just slightly less Swiss cheese than ours was.
Oh, right. Well, Who knows? Maybe he's able to put together. Maybe they can. Maybe he has been welded together strong enough over these last few surgeries that he can survive a full season.
He is not the like $5 billion man. You know what I mean? Like he's not. He's not like a robot.
You don't know
there's
that.
Not enough. There's not enough duct tape to hold Romo together for a season. That's for sure.
We can talk about that next week. All right. As well, we like make the case for Tony Romo as Seahawks right. quarterback.
Right.
Tune in next week.
Okay. I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.